2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Dota into DFS pros.
Welcome to the DFS Army Bold Calls MMA podcast for UFC 227, Dillashaw vs. Garbrandt 2. I'm your host, Kevin Allen, a.k.a. the Fantasy Football Geek. I've got the DFS Sniper on the line with me, Sean. What's happening, Sean?
You know what? I'm looking forward to this card. It's huge prize pools, pay-per-view, and it's the last card before, I think, a needed couple weeks off, so I'm pretty pumped about it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, my family's pretty pumped about it because they're like, hey, can we hang out the next 3 weekends? I'm like, sure. I'm finally not busy. I can hang out with you guys. Like, all right, it's been a long summer. Good to know you. So, very good stuff. Yeah, this is a pretty exciting card. Some really, really good fights, I would say, on the main. I'm not sure if it's pay-per-view worthy.
It's one of those cards, the pay-per-view part of it is a little rough, but top to bottom, it's a good card, and I think it's one of those cards that people are knocking on paper, but it's going to deliver. I think we're going to see some fun fights, a few finishes. I think it'll be worth it even if it doesn't look like it on paper. I wish that those people who pay it, or, you know, I wish that the whole thing was on pay-per-view. Like, let's not deal with this awful pacing and these five fights. If you're going to tell me you get 12 fights for 60, 70 bucks, whatever it is, I'd have a much easier time swallowing that.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest, this main card, it's borderline the worst pay-per-view ever. I mean, I'm not going to say ever because there's so many, but we'll talk about it. And we're going to talk about the main card for this one. On this initial part of the podcast, then we'll go to the prelims. But I'd say probably, you know, as far as pay-per-views go, and now UFC is going to make up for it with some ones down the road, but we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about this card. So I think the most fascinating thing for me about this card is just how it's loaded up with these little tiny flyweights and this 135-pounders and, you know, just a bunch of very small guys, really. It seems like they got them all on one card together. So, and gals. So, finishes might be harder to predict.
You know, there's a lot of smaller fighters in both men's and women's weight classes, but if you were to tell me that before I looked at the inside the distance props, I would be shocked at how many are as close to, you know, Vegas has pegged to go inside the distance versus not. Like, for there being a lot of small fighters, you know, even the main and co-main, we're expecting finishes.
Those two, yeah, but I mean, the rest are pretty close. But the difference is, like, last week, we were able to pinpoint on the podcast 3 or 4 fights that we said just go all in on this fight, even on both sides, even if it makes you uncomfortable, and they worked. And those fights, the winners ended up in the perfect lineup. So, especially using our DFS Army tool, the Domination Station, entering these tournaments, trying to attack them. Obviously, there's different strategies. Sure, we're going to put together one lineup that's our favorite or two lineups that we love and hit up some of the smaller, higher-dollar contests. But, you know, if we're going to go into a contest with 15,000 other people, be it the Mini-Max, which I love, for $1, 150 entries, or the $4 contest, 20 entries in that one, or the I think they have a $10 one with a $30,000. The uppercut this week is $30,000 to first. If you're going in full blast, you really have to understand that it's going to take the perfect lineup. You have to hit the bet. You have to have the nuts to win one of these things. And doing that means purposefully throwing away some lineups with fighters in there that you really don't favor. But what happens if they win and you don't have it? You don't get the nuts. And we're trying to win. The goal is to win the contest and win the $30,000. So I think a lot of the goal here with this pod and whenever we're talking and for our DFS Army subscribers and our members, everybody listening, is let's try to pinpoint which fights we should be heavy on both sides, and let's hope we're right. You know, what else can you do? All right, so let's get started with the main card. And I'm going to start at the bottom of the card, and we'll work our way up to the top. And the first fight of the main card, we have Thiago Santos taking on Kevin Holland. Santos is and this is a high-scoring fight. So Santos is a minus 325 favorite. Come back on Holland, who is plus 295. We've got an under 1.5 round prop, and we love the under 1.5 round prop when it's high, of minus 147, the highest finish prop on the card. And Vegas is looking for a finish in the first round here, which is pretty classic what Santos does in his fight. So I'll throw it over to you because I know you have a pretty strong take on this fight. Sean, what's your take here?
So this is the one that we are all expecting to end inside the distance. I don't disagree with that. You got two striking-based fighters. Thiago Santos throws everything heavy, especially that left kick is just one of the most devastating strikes in MMA. And it's really not hyperbole. That kick is nasty. Kevin Holland is a range striker, lanky, flashy, also lands knockouts. Both guys are capable of finishing. I know Holland didn't get a contract on the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series show. Still won his fight. Still, in part, portions of it look good. I think Dana really had a problem with his attitude, but I like the kid's attitude. Like, he's got a little bit of cockiness to him. These guys are going to stand and trade until someone falls. Thiago Santos, he no-shows. He is lost to Errick Spicely. And that's all I'm going to say about his ability to not show up. He was also knocked out by David Branch 3.5 months ago. Not really a long enough recovery by most people's standards. So those two things together, I think this fight, obviously, I'm not disagreeing with the inside the distance prop. It's incredibly, incredibly likely to end inside the distance. Even at his elevated price point, I think Thiago Santos, with a win the way I'm expecting him to win, and who else is in his price range, probably ends up in the nuts lineup. If Kevin Holland gets a knockout, he's going to be way underowned because everyone's on Santos, and he's absolutely in the nuts lineup. This is one of those fights that I'm going to make myself really uncomfortable on. I will say I'm probably going a little overboard and I'm going to be over the field because this week I'm especially playing a lot of the lower dollar contests where differentiating yourself is even more important than in the high dollar contests. I'm thinking right now I'm going 60-40, and that's really aggressive. I think the more standard overweight play is like 75-25, 70-30. I'm going to take it a step up. I really don't believe in Santos. I hate guys who no-show. And I like Holland's striking style. He's lanky. He's a big underdog for a reason. Definitely don't play him in cash. But this is a fight that we're starting with, that we're alluding to. This is one that I'm pinpointing on, shoving everything in.
That's a bold call. It's a bold call. Listen, I totally agree. I think this fight is going to score one way or the other. I did watch some interviews with Kevin Holland and some of his tape. You know, I couldn't even find the Contender Series tape. I went on to Fight Pass and it wasn't there. So I had to look at some of his previous fights. And, you know, he's a pretty total package. He's got a bunch of wins by submission. So he doesn't appear to be just a one-dimensional striker. He's a big guy. He's physically larger than Santos, but Santos didn't look small standing next to him by any stretch in the weigh-ins. But I do like that he's a little bit larger in general. I think that's a plus. And Santos coming off that recent loss, and he's just not a trustworthy guy. So he does score a lot, and I think 40% is like a little high on Holland, but conceptually I really like it. I have a different approach in the sense that I don't think you need to be 100. I don't think it needs to be 100% owned. So I'd look at it for tournament purposes. When you're dealing with a fighter like Santos, who is one of the more expensive fighters on DraftKings, even if we think this fight's going to score really well, like, you can make an argument that Johnson is going to outscore him, right? And you might not be able to afford both in the same lineup. So for that reason, or that DJ and, you know, one other person will outscore him up at the top, even if he gets a quick finish, because a quick finish for him could get a 105, and we've seen other types of fights go to 110 or 115. So I'm trying to get the perfect score. So I'm not 100% sure that he will be the perfect lineup. Therefore, I don't necessarily feel like I could go 50%, 30%, rather than 70-30. Do you get my drift? And leave some space there for something else to fill in on the more expensive guy. I found that it's more important to get that uncomfortably high exposure to the cheaper guy in these situations. And mainly that's because if that guy wins, he is a 100% stone-cold lock that he's in the perfect lineup. Whereas the other guy, you know, he's got to both win the fight and beat out every other fighter in his range. So that's sort of the slight twist I put on it. What do you think for cash here? Is Santos a safe cash play for you?
Not for me. I think he's going to be relatively popular. His floor is it's too low for me. I think a lot of your head-to-heads will have him, though. He's a huge favorite with a huge inside-the-distance prop. People gravitate towards him. For me personally, too much uncertainty, too low of a floor, the ability to no-show. I can maneuver other ways in the cash builds that I have, but I do think he'll be popular.
The only heavier favorite on the card, besides DJ, is Chito Vera. So
Chito Vera is the biggest favorite.
Yeah, he would be somebody mm-hmm. you could pay up a little more for in cash and have some safety, but he will be for the prelim portion. We'll discuss that. So, all right, let's move on to the next fight. On the main card, we've got Pollyanna Viana taking on J.J. Aldrich in a fight that has a massive, massive line movement take place. Viana is now a minus 130 favorite, with a comeback on Aldrich at plus 120. Now, when this fight first came out, and for a little bit of time, Viana started at minus 210, went all the way to, I think it was as much as like minus 300, minus 325 at the... So she was a very heavy favorite. And in the last pretty much day and a half, all the monies have been coming in on Aldrich. Viana is basically a submission specialist, rudimentary striking, but really good BJJ, not a bad looker. She goes for takedowns, not the best at securing them, but then again, I mean, we've only seen her against the worst of the worst fighters in the UFC in her debut. And then Aldrich is sort of a young, improving fighter from Colorado, trains with Rose Namahunas. Coming off a couple of decent wins against, Danielle Taylor. I don't know if we'd call that such a great win, but she had a nice win against Chanmi Jian, who's another striker. And Aldrich, I thought that was a really close fight, actually. But I think they're both good. And what Aldrich showed is she's tough and she's a good, she's a good striker. What's your take on this one, Sean?
My take is that despite the line value, I have a real problem with the ceiling of J.J. Aldrich. What's her ceiling? Probably the Chanmi Jian fight. Fair?
Yeah, 100 strikes and a win in the decision.
That's 80 points. And at, what is it, 7,300?
That is perfectly acceptable.
At 7,300, it's acceptable for cash. On this card, I see some people around her who have higher ceilings, but I get it. The issue with that is that's her ceiling. I don't think Pollyanna Viana is going to engage in that type of fight that lets her get to her ceiling. I think that Viana is going to close the distance and try and get takedowns. Whether she gets them or not, we can debate. I think Pollyanna Viana is just going to be too damn strong for J.J. Aldrich. And while it may not be technical, just muscle her to the ground. I can see playing J.J. Aldrich in cash because of the line value. I get it. It's a totally viable play. The more this line changes, the more I want to play Pollyanna Viana, especially in GPPs, because once this fight hits the ground, I think it's a massive mismatch. Aldrich will be the more technical striker. Viana does have more power. She swings wildly. It's not very technical. No argument there. But she's stronger. she throws a little wild. We saw Mackenzie Dern land some crazy stuff.
I mean, this is ultimately, it's easy to mistake her for Mackenzie Dern, but it's not Mackenzie Dern. It's a different girl.
No.
And by the way, it's worth noting that Aldrich has a higher degree BJJ black belt than what Pollyanna Viana has.
Well, she has a brown belt. She has a brown belt, and Pollyanna Viana technically has a purple belt. Yeah. But Viana's winning, like, high-level BJJ competitions at brown belt. And who gave her the at purple belt? Who gave her the belt? When this fight hits the ground, strength-wise, technique-wise, I'm going right towards Viana, despite what the level of belt is. Aldrich was dominated on the ground by Juliana Lima. I think if Viana wins, I think it's a submission or maybe some ground and pound, and she's going to be under owned because of the line movement. So I actually like Viana a fair amount in tournaments, and don't go crazy, but I'm going to try and be overweight to the field. Aldrich is in play in cash because of the odds value. I don't know if it's for me. I get it, but I don't know if I'm going to do it.
Yeah. A lot of these fights are really tricky. This one is certainly that. My concern with Viana is I'm not sure she can get it to the ground, and I'm not sure that she's going to be so quick to submit Aldrich, who has some training in that area. She trains hard. This is the thing. I see the loss to Juliana Lima as well. But you got to understand, this is 2016. This girl's been training nonstop, full-time as her occupation for the last couple of years. So that might not have been the case, and certainly she would be improving. You see this with a lot of female fighters. They improve over time because they're not necessarily coming up from childhood learning these skills. They pick up the sport at later in life. They start to learn everything. And here, someone like Aldrich, you know, wins a couple fights in the UFC. You know, now she could do this full time. She's a UFC fighter. She has wins. She's got a team. She's training with Rose. I think she's preparing for this opponent, and I think they're probably preparing her with some takedown defense. I can't imagine that they're not. I mean, maybe that's wishful thinking, but I think she's pretty tough. I'm not convinced that Viana is stronger than her, and so for that reason, I'm not super excited about Viana. She's almost – I mean, I do like the fact that when lines move against someone, I do like that for tournaments, but in cash, I definitely don't mind I don't mind Aldrich here. I mean, the over 2.5 round prop is minus 152. The main fear is Viana wins by submission, plus 310. All right, so she has, a chance. It's not a super high chance, plus 310. I mean, it seems like it's more likely that she won't win by decision, like something else will happen. So, for that reason, I do like Aldrich in cash. Definitely. Why not? And in tournaments, sure. Mainly because it's quite possible that none of these other dogs will score as much. You need a couple of them. You're going to need two underdogs on this card minimum. And most of them are extremely long odds to win their fights. So, you know, we're trying to get two that have the best chance to win. And this is certainly one place to go for that. So I don't mind Aldrich. Probably as much as you do in all formats. But that said, I agree with you. Her ceiling is definitely capped right at that, you know, right about 80 points in the perfect storm. But I just think that's enough. All right, moving on to the next fight. We've got Cub Swanson taking on Hanado Moicano. Swanson plus 265 underdog. Comeback, Moicano is a minus 295 favorite. Over 2.5 rounds prop, minus 315. So the expectation here is that this fight will go the full three rounds. Moicano is more of a submission grappler, whereas Swanson is more of a striker. And this is what I find interesting. Now, it's interesting that the over 2.5 round prop is so high. This is almost like we should be fading this, because Swanson's losses have, like, almost always come by submission. He's been submitted. He was submitted by Edgar, submitted by Holloway, Ortega. I mean, if you go through his losses, it's almost always by submission. It's crazy, right? Now he's facing a really, really good submission grappler. Now, why the hell is the over 2.5 pound minus 315? Like, Hanado by sub? Let's see what that is. Plus 520?
Yeah, I don't think Moicano's not really a submission grappler.
I mean, his wins have all come by submission. He hasn't had a KO. I mean, I get that. I don't understand why he's not a submission grappler. He's never had a win that was by knockout. It's only been by submission or by decision. It's like all he ever does is submit people. He's not a relentless. I guess he beat Cater by decision.
Right. He has did that one sub in his UFC debut over
some scrub, right?
Tom, yes, somebody not good. And then usually it's striking matches. I think he took down Jeremy Stevens twice, but it's because he can take down Jeremy Stevens twice.
And he took down T-City a couple times. No one normally tries it, so I mean, I'm sure that was an easy takedown for him. I was screaming, don't, by the way.
One of them is one he shouldn't, like, he got two takedowns. One of them was the worst idea in the world.
I remember. I was like, don't. I remember that fight. I was screaming. But, I mean, he's got takedowns against Jeremy Stevens. He's got takedowns, not against the Dagestani fighter he took on. Didn't go for takedowns in that one. But, I mean, and against Cater, he just pieced him up so well on the feet that there was no reason to go for a takedown, right? So, but, I mean, what's he going to do with Cub? Cub's a pretty good striker. If I'm Moicano and I'm fighting a guy like Cub who's almost all of his losses have come by submission, I mean, I'm going that route. But the reason I say he's a submission grappler is just because that's where his wins have come from. I mean, he's just, you know, he's got a 40%, 42% sub rate, 0% TKO. He's never knocked someone out. So that's not what he does. He's not going to do it. Even though striking, like I said, looked really good in the last couple of fights. And he definitely throws with some volume. So I don't know. I think these odds are a little bit off. I think Moicano does have a chance to score here with submission, but he does tend to go to decision more often than not, which kind of, for his $9,100 DraftKings salary, seems a little steep. Like, so what's your take on this one?
Yeah, for me, I don't think Cub's an okay striker. He's just unorthodox, and I think his only path to victory here is landing something unorthodox with some power against Hanato. For me, I like Moicano a ton. I think he's a large favorite for a reason in this one. Cub Swanson got hit by Artem Lobov 123 times.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's not good. Hanato Moicano, good luck with that. Good luck staying upright. You get hit that many times, as clean as he was getting hit. Duho Choi was getting, you know, that was a back-and-forth crazy fight. That fight hasn't aged great. And his two other recent wins are Tatsuya Kawajiri and Hakran Diaz. Hanato Moicano is better than those guys.
Wait. I'm gonna back this up, because by the same argument, his losses have come to Frankie. He's got a win against Jeremy Stevens. His losses have come against Frankie Edgar, Max Holloway, T-City Ortega, and again Frankie Edgar. I mean, you're talking about Ortega and Holloway, number one and the champion, and then Frankie Edgar, the guy right behind those two. So I mean, but his losses recently have been against the best in the division.
But if you want to do MMA math, Nacho Moicano's fight against Brian Ortega, he was up two rounds. Cub Swanson was not. Cub Swanson almost got finished in the first, survived, and then got finished in the second.
I thought he looked okay against Ortega until he got subbed.
I didn't think he looked great. Either way, on the feet, Hanato is the more technical striker. I think he hits more power. Cub just has that crazy unorthodox style.
Can Moicano score enough here? I mean, if the assumption is a -315 decision prop, and he's not going for a lot of takedowns, how's he scoring over the course of three rounds? Because some of these fights where you're seeing these numbers, 100 and, you know, all these strike numbers for Swanson, and Swanson's willing to stand and trade. That's the one thing. He's going to stand and trade. He's not going to run away. So, I mean, you should expect these guys to get to the high end, top end of their striking ceiling against one another. But that also means, you know, if Moicano's trading with him, you know, he can catch Moicano too. You never know.
Yeah, the scoring is the issue here. I think, unfortunately, Moicano's ceiling, not the best, but he does have a safe floor because I do think he wins. And I don't see Cub winning this fight, but there are better fights to target inside the distance. There are better grappling-based fights to target. So how much of this do you really want? It comes down to your it really comes down to your builds and what you're comfortable with. I do think Moicano wins this fight pretty comfortably, and I'm not looking at having a lot of Cub Swanson at all.
I'm just going to throw in that I will have some Cub Swanson, again, in mass multi-entry, mainly because, like I said, this is a warrior. He's one of the better fighters. He's only lost to the best guys in the division. And, you know, it's easy for us to write people like him off and oh, well, he lost to Max, and he lost to Frankie, and that's it, or he lost to T-City. These guys are no joke. So he's losing to the best guys. He's not losing to scrubs. I saw the fight against Artem, and you know what? That was an awesome fight, first of all. Cub did great. Artem just took the beating. I mean, part of the problem when you're just a striker and you have no other real... Like, Cub doesn't have a part of his game where he's going for takedowns and submissions. It's just not something he does. But, like, if you did that, you could beat... Artem's fine if he's in that kind of a battle. The problem with Artem is he doesn't have much grappling skill. So if you take him down, you can beat him easy. And so you watch him fight against wrestlers and he gets his ass kicked. And you're like, oh, this guy sucks. But maybe he doesn't suck. He's probably a pretty good striker. He just sucks at wrestling. So that I think has been more of the problem for him. So I'm just cautioning against the full fate of Swanson here. I like Moicano. I'm not sure I think he's going to score enough to be in the perfect lineup. I do think there's that possibility of a sneaky sub that no one's talking about. But I agree with you. You know, according to the odds here, it should go to decision. And the ceiling for Moicano's decision was his win over Calvin Kattar, 119 strikes. And, you know, what was it, 88 points. If he doesn't go for takedowns, it's not going to score well. He does have it in his arsenal. He's not relentless about it. So let's see what happens. All right, let's move on to the next one. We've got Shaman Moraes taking on Matt Sales. And this is one of the toughest ones. Moraes is a minus 115 favorite at the moment. Slightly, little teeny favorite. He's cheaper on DraftKings. So the comeback on Sales is plus 105. Yet, for salary purposes, we've got Sales at 8,300, the more expensive fighter, with Moraes at 7,900. So, two stand-up strikers for the most part. From what I can gather, the doesn't go to the decision prop is minus 130. Very common on this card. That's sort of kind of like a pick'em decision or not. Moraes, what we saw him the first time, kind of hung in there with Zabit Magomedsharipov, which is impressive in its own regard. Sales is the... He trains with Dominic Cruz, I believe, and sort of a hyped-up guy, a little bit less experienced. So what's your take on this fight from a GPP perspective?
For GPPs, I like this fight a ton, and this is... You caught me off guard with this one. I thought we were sticking to the main card.
Yeah, am I not on that? Did I jump off the thing here?
Yeah, this is the...
Did I jump off the rail? You know, I'm going
This is the first fight of the FX prelims. But we can go through it, and we'll do six public and six VIP.
You know what? It messed me up because the order on my best fight odds screen is messed up here with that one. But all right, yeah. So let's talk about that one anyway. So it's the prelim there. We added one more to the mix.
So this is risky for GPPs, but I think this is the fight that could pay off that no one's talking about. So Shaman Moraes is a typical Brazilian kickboxer. Think Francisco Trinaldo is another example. Think a less powerful Thiago Santos. That style of fighter. Muay Thai specialist, hits hard, especially considering they're at 145. Matt Sales is a straightforward guy. He's going to go forward. He's going to try and throw volume and really march forward and throw that overhand. Not a ton of volume, excuse me. He's going to march forward, pressure, a lot of pressure, and try and throw the overhand right. Sales also does have some grappling should he choose to use it. And on the regional scene has shown some really good ground and pound. Personally, I think this fight finishes just because of the style Matt Sales brings to it. It reminds me a little of Matt Frivola, who came off the Contender Series. And that didn't go well for Frivola. He marched toward into a Marco Polo Reyes right hand. I think Sales is a little better than Frivola, but it's more the style I'm getting at. I think this guy is going to be knocked out or get knocked out. And Moraes has plenty of power. When I'm building, I land more on sales for the... No, you know what? I was landing a little more on Marais. It's really even. I'm going to split up the ownership on this fight. I'm not sure. I don't think it's an all-in type of fight.
No, definitely not. This one, if it doesn't finish, by the way. If it doesn't finish, it's, you know... Again,
it's a stinker. That's why I said it was risky.
This is one of these cards where you might get a lot of fights that don't finish. And so the 88s and the 87s, you could be playing with wins at 89 and the winning lineup has a 91 or an 88. Like, it could be that kind of a card. Don't know for sure, but it's possible. But yeah, this one is just like these other ones. No real grappling expected.
Yeah. That's one of those, just when I was watching tape, sales of style stuck out to me. Of all the ones that are standing and trading, this is the one I think stylistically is likely to end in a finish. So I'm going to be overweight to the field. This one, this is, I think, outside of Santos, Holland, and we'll get to the main event, Dillashaw Garbrandt. You need a third fight where you're overweight to the field, and there's a few different places to go. We'll talk about a couple more later. This is the one, as of right now, I'm leaning on. Being on both sides, because I think there's a finish here.
I like the call. I agree. I don't have a lean. I hate to say it. Between these two guys, if I had to lean a smidge, I'm going to lean a smidge to Sales, just because, you know, you see there when they stood next to each other, Sales, even though, again, the height numbers and the reach numbers favor Marais. I mean, I don't know. These two guys standing next to each other, Sales look like the bigger guy. In my opinion. So, I mean, from what I could see in the standoff, Sales look a little bigger. You know, he's got a great camp. He's working with Dom Cruz. He's working with really good fighters. And I just think there's something to that. So, you know, from what I've seen of the tape, he's got good counter-striking. He seems aggressive. Again, you never know. It's hard to tell with Marais how good he is because, again, you know, no one's going to look so great against Zabit. I mean, just surviving that was pretty impressive. But it's one of many fights that I think could either score low or it could put up a really big score. I wish I had a better sense of these two guys, like which one is going to win, but I really don't. So I think I agree, pretty even exposure across tournaments. Don't go anywhere near this in cash. It's, you know, if you can't decide, if I don't have a serious lean, it's not a cash play. That's it. Rather than just, you know, take a shot somewhere else or stack a fight that I'm not sure about. So I'm not going near this thing in cash. And in tournaments, pretty even exposure to both guys. I'd say if you want to be above the field, about 25% each guy. I think the field will be in the 20s, in the low 20s, 20% each, because no one really has a strong lean. So if you want to be above the field, maybe 30%, that kind of level. All right, let's move on to the co-main event of the evening. We've got Mighty Mouse Demetrius Johnson taking on a rematch with Henry the Messenger Cejudo. Mighty Mouse, minus 430. Very expensive. Puts up big numbers. Cejudo, plus 380. Inside the distance prop on this one, minus 165. Okay. Now, a couple things of note. Cejudo, so these guys fought earlier in their careers. And a big difference, I think, between then and now, Cejudo's a wrestler, he's a boxer. He's, you know, on paper, he's got it all. There's nothing that Cejudo doesn't have on paper that really doesn't say he should be a very, very good UFC fighter. The biggest, worst thing he's got going for him is, you know, he's young young in his career. Couple nice wins recently, especially Sergio Pettis. I think that's an impressive win. I like Sergio. Got knocked out in seconds in the first time, but Cejudo's a guy who's had some trouble with his weight cuts, and that issue seems to be behind him. But he had some trouble with his weight cuts, and I have a suspicion that that fast knockout in that first fight, because DJ is not really known for knocking people out at all. Like, he rarely gets a finish like that. So I think a little of that may have been, you know, some weight cut, you know. Am I making excuses? Maybe. But I kind of think that was a thing. Important note about Demetrius Johnson, he's skilled at everything. You can't even break down this fighter. There's nothing he doesn't do very, very well. He wrestles. He counter-wrestles. He's got takedown defense. He has takedowns. He goes for takedown. Now, I don't know. You know, it's funny. I don't know what he's going to do against a wrestler like Cejudo, maybe he keeps it standing like he did. Well, I believe there's a fight against Hayes recently where I kind of faded DJ because I was like, well, he's not going to go for takedowns against a BJJ guy. Now, I don't know if that's the case with him and the wrestler, but generally, so, one of the nice things that Demetrius Johnson does is score a shitload in his wins. In his last fight against Borg, he had 8 takedowns in 19 advanced positions. I mean, unheard-of numbers in 169. Ridiculous scores. He's got a string of 100-plus wins, point wins, that are ridiculous, especially when he goes for the takedowns. I'm not sure that he's going to go for takedowns against Cejudo, but what do you think? Do I need to be 100% all-in on Demetrius Johnson tomorrow?
No, because he's too damn expensive for that. And also because I think this fight is actually closer than the line, which is probably an unpopular opinion. I'm still picking Cejudo. I'm just picking Demetrius. Picking DJ. I think Cejudo is more live than people would expect. I agree with you. The weight issue was a problem. It's also a 125-pound fight. You can't count on the flash knockout. I know that Cejudo took down DJ once, couldn't control him, but over 5 rounds, if he gets a couple takedowns, we saw Tim Elliott get a little bit of control. Why can't an Olympic-level wrestler find a way to get some control? That being said, DJ should be better on the feet, although Cejudo's a Golden Gloves boxer. He also showed off this karate style against Wilson Hayes. Again, all those are just little chips that make me want to play a little bit of Cejudo, and I'm going to do that because I think he's live. Plus, to be perfectly honest, I just have a gut feeling something funky's going to happen in this fight, and we'll see how that goes. But that's a gut feeling that's kind of everyone has their own. When you look at the analytics of it, DJ is faster. We saw he can beat up Cejudo on the feet. I don't think too much has changed there. He's better in the clinch. He just has to avoid the takedowns and pop back up, which he's always been able to do. And he has a strong BJJ game. When he wins, he scores big. I'll have plenty of DJ, but that price tag really limits your options, especially if you like, you know, at that point you need 200 dogs to come through. I wouldn't put all your eggs in that basket. I'm still going to be overweight to the field on DJ, I think, although I think DJ's going to come in around 40 to 45% owned.
He could be higher than that.
He could be. Well, then I'll be on weight to the field. I'm going to be a shade above that, I think, but I'm also going to hedge a little bit with Cejudo because if he wins, he's absolutely in the nuts.
You want to know how stifling Demetrius Johnson is? He went 3 rounds with Hayes. Hayes only landed 16 strikes. He went 5 rounds with Borg. Borg got a couple takedowns, 13 strikes. I think the most success anybody's had against this guy in recent memory, and this is going back years at this point, is probably Tim Elliott, who, you know, just did a lot of grappling and kind of turned it into this grapple fest, and Elliott was able to get some grappling points. Before that, really, no one landed strikes on him. So it's interesting. I keep thinking about, you know, hey, the cash stack. Oh, we want to stack this in cash. Sure. And I do think it's in play because I think, you know, Demetrius, when you're tiny like this, you could be taken down. Like, I think DJ can be taken down. Like, he'll get right back up. But you could take him down. But he gets right back up. So, you know, maybe that could lead to some points for the cheapest fighter on the card, which is what we're going for when we're punting Cejudo. We're saying, all right, it's the cheapest guy on the card. Let's pump it. I'm throwing out there just, you know, what I'm trying to figure out is, all right, I don't think Cejudo's going to win. No one beats DJ. I mean, can he win? Sure, but is he going to? Unlikely. You know, so you get 10% shares of him in tournaments just in case, like alone. But how much is he going to score in a loss? And if you look at DJ's previous fights, for the most part, the guys who he's beaten up on don't score a whole lot, even in 5 rounders. And every fight of his is 5 rounds. Like, these guys have not scored a whole lot. So it is important to note that, like, John Moraga, 5-round fight, 1 takedown, 32 strikes. I mean, you know, 20 points. People aren't scoring that much on this guy. He's really, really good. So for that reason, I do like this fight in cash as a cash stack for sure. I don't really like Cejudo for the win, although, again, I'll always have some soul exposure because even if he doesn't win, he might if the card goes a certain way and all the favorites win, which does happen on occasion, then the punt that scores the most will get you in the nuts. And I've seen that happen. We saw that happen with Nick Lentz in a loss, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago or 4 or 5 cards ago. I can't remember. But so that can happen. But as far as the top-end ownership of DJ, the one thing I look at with the stylistic matchup is I just wonder, Johnson does his best scoring when he's doing a lot of grappling. I'm not sure if he's going to do that against Cejudo. He might just choose to keep it standing, which will lower his average score, which is why you don't go 100%. And I will not go 100% on DJ on this card, but I'll have a ton of exposure. All right, let's move on to the main event of the evening. We got the rematch between Cody Nolov and TJ Dillashaw. And it's a pick'em fight. They put an $8,200 price tag on TJ. Comeback on Cody is $8,000. Everybody saw Dillashaw win the previous fight. Looked really good for Garbrandt in the first round. He's almost got the knockout. A saved by the bell scenario happened. Second round comes in. Dillashaw lands the kick to the head, the head kick, and you know that's all she wrote. So to me, this is a high action fight. I mean, TJ's been a higher scoring fighter as compared to Cody statistically. Strikes at a higher output, more takedowns, but it's really, you know, just splitting straws. Difference is Cody finishes fights more often. He's got a lot of finishing power. TJ's probably slightly more skilled, very, very technical. Cody's technical too. I mean, you don't beat Dom Cruz if you're not technical. By the way, that's super impressive. You don't beat Dominic Cruz if you're not technical. TJ is like kind of like Dom Cruz 2.0. Cody Garbrandt, just a powerful, highly skilled fighter. Both of these guys are really, really good. So my take on it from tournaments is I just think more people are going to be on TJ because he won the last one. Simple as that. I think you have to have this fight stacked in cash or avoided. There's no way you can be comfortable with who's going to win. And people are going to say, TJ, all right, go for it. I mean, obviously, Dillashaw is slightly favored, so if you want to go that way. But I don't think you can be comfortable with picking a winner here. So I think you have to pick the one that you think has a better chance to win, maybe go 60-40 with that person. But I'm keeping in mind that I think TJ will be higher owned than Cody, and I give him about even odds for whoever's going to win. Whoever will win will be in the perfect lineup, though. That I'm pretty confident of. So what's your take on this fight?
Pretty much exactly the same. I'm going to be all in on it. I lean TJ, as do most people. He just has a more complete game. Cody's hand speed is faster. TJ cuts angles better, I think. Uses his footwork. He can get in on takedowns. He's the more complete fighter, so he's the one I have to go with. Although it is obviously incredibly close, and I wouldn't get cute and overanalyze this one. I'm so unsure about it. I'm going to run multiple lineups, cash lineups this week as well. And I think I'm going to stack this fight in one of them. And the other one, I may just totally avoid it, as you mentioned, and get some exposure to some other pieces. I'm not sure that's the direction I'm going, but I do think cash is especially difficult this week. This fight is going to score well. These guys hate each other. They're going to come forward. Give me the more complete fighter in TJ. And I think that's exactly what I wrote up earlier in the Sniper Scope. I think I wrote up 60-40.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be one or the other side. I mean, you make your choice if you want TJ more TJ. If you're listening to this, make your choice on this. You know what I mean? Know that TJ will be higher owned, and then make a decision how you want to approach it. But basically, for tournaments, one of each guy. So it feels so – people feel bad. They're like, I feel like I'm throwing away a lineup. If you're entering the big tournament, you're going to throw away lineups. That is what you do. If you're trying to avoid that, if you're in a 10,000 person contest, you have to do that. So if you want to avoid it, don't enter that contest. Go into a 40 person contest or a 20 person contest. Raise up the entry amount. Stack it if you need to, or fade it. Don't take chances on fights in higher dollar, smaller entrant contests that you're not sure of, or that you don't feel really confident one or the other, that you're guessing, or that you want to split it, we don't want to do that. Not in a small high-dollar contest. But we do that in the big tournament because the idea is to win. Every other lineup is just bullshit. In the end of the day, we're trying to win. If we don't win, we're hoping to get our money back, and that's it. It's as simple as that. When you're entering the 10,000, the 15,000 person contest, if I'm not winning in first place, I'm really just hoping to get my money back. And usually you don't. But that's the approach that it takes to win. You're going to lose sometimes too. All right, so from here, we're going to move on to the prelims. I want to thank everybody out there for listening to the first portion of the show. And if you're not a current DFS Army VIP subscriber, go to dfsarmy.com. Sign up as a VIP member. You will get access to our Domination Station Optimizer for MMA. You're going to get everything else we do. Football, basketball, every sport is covered. We have incredible projections. Everything is custom. Tools, cheat sheets. More big winners than any other place. There's no site that's putting out big winners the way DFS Army is. There's a reason. I think we've had a nuts. We've hit the nuts in. We've had one of our members at the very least hit the nuts in every MMA contest for the past month. Could be going back further than that. I don't even really track it, but it seems like every single week we have somebody or multiple people hit the nuts. I tied with a couple of DFS Army members two cards ago in the mini max. So. We're getting that perfect lineup every week in MMA. The team is ridiculous. Get in there. Sign up as a VIP. Get in there now. Use promo code GEEK to get 10% off.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.